WATD presents John Paul, the Car Doctor. All things automotive. Have questions? Call 781-837-4900. Now, here's John Paul, the Car Doctor.
And good Sunday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Car Doctor program on 95.9 WATD. Well, it's been an interesting week. We were out in Denver last week, where I have never been. I've never been to Denver. It was an interesting place to go. It's also interesting. It appears as if Denver as a city is almost discouraging cars. They're doing a lot of building. They're putting a lot of condos and apartments in, and they're sort of, it really looks like they're clustering the living space right near where people are going to work. So, you know, and they have a pretty good public transportation system. You can take the train right from the airport, which is maybe 5 miles outside of downtown, right into the city and jump right off. That's what several of my coworkers did who was at the same conference I was at. And I did not do that. I actually got a car to review, and we'll talk about that probably next week. And it was a great little Mercedes small sedan, and it had winter tires on it, which I didn't think much of, except for 2 weeks ago, Denver got like 2 feet of snow, which is way too much snow for the beginning of April. But they did. And it was kind of nice, you know, looking off into the distance. You could see the mountains, and you could see all the snow cover at the mountains. So it was nice to see. This morning, we're supposed to have Randy Leffingwell. Randy wrote a fabulous book called Porsche 911, 60 Years of Excellence. And it really talks about, you know, all of the kind of what happened throughout the 9/11 story and different models and profiles. Really a great book. And for somebody who doesn't read a lot, lots of pictures. And I like pictures. And it's a typical coffee table style book. It is it's a big book, heavy, something you'd be certainly pleased to display. Jesse's working on trying to call him now. He was all confirmed to be on the show earlier in the week. So Jesse's going to work on that. Let me know when that's going to happen. A little bit later on, too, we're going to be talking to Mark Shieldrop. He's from AAA. He's been on the program before. And we're going to talk about some of the things AAA is doing in the electric vehicle space, including some of the electric vehicles we're using now for road service purposes. So we're going to be talking about that. Well, the reason I was out in Denver was there is a group called Lifesavers. Lifesavers for years and years has had this conference to really kind of see what the latest and greatest, you know, safety innovations are. It can be anything from there was a whole up in the trade show area. There was a whole row of the newest car seats to keep kids safe. Newest technology used. Everything from some seats that actually had technology in them. If you forgot to take your child out, it would let you know about that. Ease of installation and all of that type of thing. So it was, there was that. There was also the, you know, some of the latest safety innovations for police officers to use, breathalyzers and all that sort of stuff. There was a lot of that going on. And more importantly, there was a lot of workshops. And the workshops, and some of the ones I went to were, you know, new car technology and, you know, how some of the technology can help drivers, but also some of the things that we talk about when it comes to cars, and not me as a car reviewer, but the general public, and how some of those comments can actually help make the cars more user-friendly and better to use, some of the new safety innovations, some of the new advanced driver assistance features. The event itself is really pretty interesting, and it's one of those things I've only been to once before. I went to it probably 10 years ago now when it was in Charlotte, North Carolina, and that was a good event. I went to a lot of the workshops there. I didn't In this case, I didn't go to as many of the workshops, but I did. I did go to some of them, which was kind of nice to see, and got to see some people I haven't seen, including my coworkers. You know, I've been working remotely since COVID. I've been sort of semi-retired for almost 2 years now, I guess. So I haven't really seen any of my coworkers. I think back in August, I saw a few of them. And when my boss actually retired, they had a little luncheon get-together at the office, and I came up for that. But I haven't really seen anybody, so it was kind of good to do that. Also, I saw some of the National Office, AAA National Office people that I worked with a little bit more regularly. And on Monday at noontime, there was a luncheon, and the luncheon was attended by about 2,000 people. And at this lunch, they gave out some different awards to people who have been innovative in different things that they do, whether it's there was a retired police chief who just recently retired, and I want to say he might have been from Montana, but I'm not really sure. And he was he worked with a lot of underserved communities to do child pastor safety stuff. There was a guy who owns a Grease Monkey franchise, one of the quick lube places, and he seemed to be a young dad who was concerned about making sure that his kids were safe in cars. So he has two technicians at every one of his quick lube places that are certified to do car seats. So he got an award for that. Then there was something called a Lifetime Achievement Award, and that was presented to me. And that was something that I was, you know, kind of shocked when I heard I was going to get it. But it was really about, you know, how that not just doing child pastor safety and some things like that. And I was a lead instructor for the AAA Driver Improvement Program. So I taught other instructors how to do that and taught a lot of classes. I went out and did older driver presentations. But what I do kind of every day, even though I only work part-time, but what I do every day, and that's try to help people with their car questions, talk about recalls, just try to help people be as safe as they can in their cars, and also be kind of a trusted advisor and advocate for motorists to help them with their car problems. So it was pretty nice to see this. And what was interesting about it is most of the time the people that got this award, the award was given posthumously, so they were no longer with us. So it was kind of nice to still be alive, I guess, and still get the award. It was something that was it was really an honor to do that. But even as kind of neat as that was, is somebody came up to me, and I apologize, I should have written down your name. Should have wrote it down on my hand or something. But somebody came up to me and said, I listen to your podcast every week after you do your radio program. When you post your podcast, I listen to it every week. I'm a fan. I like what you do. And it always strikes me as, you know, I do this program to talk to our audience, whether they're listening online, potentially around the world, or whether they're listening on 95.9 within our broadcast range, no matter how they're listening, if they're telling their smart speaker to listen to WATD or they're going online with their computer and listening that way. I always kind of do that. And I always think about that's how people listen. But I never think about people listening on the podcast so much, because the program that I do, and it's always live. I'm always here on Sundays. I think the only time I wasn't here on Sunday, it was when the Hanover hockey team was in the finals. The station wanted to do the program from the Garden, which was great. Happy to give up my time slot so the parents of the team could listen. And Christmas, because Christmas fell on Sunday, and we had Christmas music, so I didn't do it on Sunday. So, but I'm always live. I always try to be here for everybody, but I never really think of the podcast. The podcast really started to exist when I had a guest on the program, and it never failed that usually the next few days later, somebody would say, hey, any chance of getting a copy of the interview? And I would say, okay. So then I started to found a podcast site, put it on the podcast, and there are, 650 episodes, and a lot of people listen to it. And I want to thank that listener of the podcast who came up to me and said, hello, I apologize I didn't get your name, but it was nice of you to come up, it was nice of you to congratulate me, and it was nice of you to say you listened to the podcast. So I appreciate that as well. I guess we're going to think that Randy Leffingwell is not going to be able to join us today. So, next week, by the way, we are talking to a woman who started a Volkswagen enthusiast club called the Women of Wolfsburg. And we'll talk to her about what she's got going on with that. So before I went to the Tampa airport, which is a little ways away from me, I wanted to change the oil in my car. My car gave me a little warning that said, you're due for an oil change in X amount of days. I was still about 3,800 miles under the mileage, because when I'm here in Florida, I don't really go too far. There's a Home Depot 5 miles away. There's a Walmart a mile away. There's a really good local hardware store. I really like going there. They're only about 4 miles away. So I don't put a lot of miles. Most of the miles that I put on was for the drive coming down here. So although it was almost 6 months, it wasn't quite, but it was almost 6 months. The mileage was way low. It was, I think it was probably only 3,500 miles or something like that. But on this car, on the car I drive back and forth, the Hyundai Santa Fe Sport, which is now getting to be 6 years old, I do change the oil myself, and I do it because it's relatively easy. I have a set of ramps that a neighbor bought for me at a yard sale, the plastic kind, I think they're the Rhino brand or something. It gets the car just about 8 inches off the ground, which makes it nice and easy to get under it. The oil filter, you don't have to, although it has a big plastic pan on the bottom of the car, the oil filter has a round access cover that sort of makes it nice and easy to get the oil filter off. And the oil drain plug has kind of a oval-shaped cover underneath that keeps all the dirt from collecting up in there, but also makes it easy to get to the drain plug. One of the reasons that I do my own oil change is because I did bring the car to a quick lube place once, and I didn't like so much what they did. I didn't like the filter quality. I don't know that there's anything wrong with the filter, but it wasn't what I wanted. I typically like to use the factory filters if I can. So it's a Hyundai. I use a Hyundai/Kia filter because they're all the same. I've had never had a problem. In fact, Hyundai, a bunch of years ago, and I think it's probably still out, they still say that they only recommend the Hyundai filter. Well, of course, they can only recommend it. They can't require it, because even though there's a technical service bulletin, if they required it, they would have to give it to you, because the Magnuson-Moss law requires that, you know, if that's the only part that can be used, it has to be available for free. But they do recommend it, and there is a difference. I used a Fram filter one time, and I noticed the next day when I went to start the car up, it ticked and tapped for 30 seconds. And it was a premium filter. It was their better brand. But I left that filter on there for about another day. I went and got the factory filter, put that on. Ticking and tapping went away. So although the filter is mounted sort of the right side up to hold oil in there, there must be something. It must be a check valve in there that keeps the oil from draining out of the engine. There's got to be something going on in there that the factory filter eliminates that. And there is a little trick you can do to minimize oil spillage. Get like a big disposable plastic cup, like a Red Solo cup kind of thing, maybe even a little bit bigger than that, and sort of break the filter loose and then stick the Red Solo cup in there up over the filter and use the cup to twist the filter off. Any of the oil that would normally drain down your arm goes into the cup. So it keeps you a little bit cleaner when you're doing it. My car also takes a weird amount of oil. It takes about 5 1/3 quarts. And I don't know why. Why 5 wasn't quite enough, or 6 wasn't, or 6 was enough, but it takes like 5 1/3 quarts of oil. So you buy a 5-quart jug of oil, and then you have to go buy an extra quart, or you buy 2 5-quart jugs of oil, and you keep 4 3/4 quarts extra. But I bought the extra quart, and for one reason or another, and I don't know why, I've been using Pennzoil Platinum oil, which is their fully synthetic oil made out of natural gas, supposedly, rather than out of crude oil. I don't know why I use it. I just tried it one time and I've sort of stuck with it since then. It's a little bit more expensive than their fully synthetic oil, which I think is like $23 or $4 for a 5-quart container. The Platinum stuff is, I think, $27 or $8. But that's what I use. And seems to work well. It does everything I want to do. So, you know, do I still change oil in my own car? Yes, I do. Somebody asked me that. And do I enjoy it? Not really, but I like to know it's done right. The Volkswagen that we keep here in Florida, the 2015 Volkswagen Beetle, I don't change the oil in it because there's a big metal pan that's on the bottom of the car, and there's about 12 little, probably 12 millimeter head size bolts that hold the pan to the bottom of the car. So you have to take that down, and I just can't do that on ramps. It's too awkward to do. So I bring it to a local AAA approved auto repair shop, and they do it, and they charge me, $75 or $80 to do it, something like that. And that oil gets changed once a year. That car probably has, we try to drive it a fair amount while it's here. But it probably only gets a couple thousand miles in the 6 months that we're here. But I'm a fan of, before I put cars away for the season, I try to change the oil so at least it's fresh oil that's sitting there. Some people disagree with that. Some people say that oil doesn't go bad when it's just sitting in an engine. I don't want, if there is acids in the oil from a lot of short trips, I would prefer that the oil's out of the engine. It's just one of those things that I do. The local AAR shop, why do I go there? I went to a quick lube place. And I got the car home, and I noticed the next day there was a drip of oil on the ground. I'm like, And I'm like, well, maybe they had problems with the pan, putting the pan back on, oil spilled when they were adding oil to the car. Maybe that's the reason. It wasn't. The oil drain plug, apparently they lost the oil drain plug. Which, when your only job is to remove an oil drain plug and reinstall a new one, I'm not sure how you lost it. But they did. So I brought the car back, they looked, and they went, yeah, sure enough, the oil drain plug's leaking. It's not the right one. And I said, well, it was the right one when it came here. So you guys lost it. Then what scared me even more is they had like a little bin of extra used oil drain plugs. How do they lose them? And why? Your only job is to remove the oil drain plug and hold it in your hand. That's all you do. You take out the oil drain plug and you hold it in your hand and let the oil drain, and then maybe replace the gasket, wipe it down, put it back in, tighten it properly. That's all you need to do. Well, these people didn't. And I went to the local auto parts store and bought a replacement oil drain plug, and they and I had that, and then that was fine. And then the next time when I went to the approved AAA approved auto repair shop near here, I brought a factory drain plug with me and said to the guy at the counter, when the car comes in, two things I'd like to do. I'd like to look under it just to see how it's doing, because it sits mostly and I don't get under it very often. And I have this new oil drain plug that I'd like you to put in. And they kind of went, oh, okay. And then I was kind of standing outside the shop, and young guy changing the oil, and he said, oh, yeah, I get your drain plug here. He said, how come you're changing it? I said, well, somehow the last shop lost it. And he said the same thing. Your only job is to save the oil drain plug. And even if you have a good-sized oil drain catch pan, even one that connects to a big tank under the building or whatever the case is, that's your only job is to save it. Don't let it go down the drain. And he was a little amazed at that. The local shop also did a battery test while I was there. They checked the brake pad condition. Nice little shop. Nice that they did all that. And they didn't lose the drain plug, which was kind of nice, too. A bunch of interesting questions came in this week. And some of the ones that we've been looking at. Somebody has a 2023 Honda Pilot Touring model with 12,000 miles. They say, when I push the reverse button first thing in the morning, the front passenger door makes a loud banging noise. It usually happens every time I get in the car. I took it to the dealer, but they weren't able to duplicate the problem, and I guess it only happens when it's cold. And they said, they took it to the dealer, and it says, what can I do? Well, I'm guessing the noise is a sticking door lock solenoid. But when you put the car in gear, it locks all the doors. You could probably disable that. Go into the menu and disable that. Good safety feature, though. And it's probably that either actuator or solenoid is either defective or stuck or something's going on with it. But since you can get to do it with some consistency, you said that you let it sit overnight, you get in it, put it in gear, and it makes that noise, take out your phone and do a video. And, aim it at the passenger door, shift the car in reverse when it sits overnight, and let it make that thunk or bang or whatever the noise is. And this way, at least when you bring it back for service, you can say, this is the noise, this is what it's doing, and this is what I want you guys to fix. Why don't we take a break, pay some bills. When we come back, we'll be talking to the guest that actually did call in, Mark Shieldrop from AAA. My name is John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. You're listening on 95.9 WATD. We'll be right back.
AAA is with you at every moment in your life. They have 24-hour, 7 roadside assistance, which covers you in any car you're driving or riding in, even a rental or your friend's wheels. They have great member rates on home and auto insurance, savings on travel, hotels, and rental cars, and discounts on hundreds of your favorite brands. You're covered on and off the road. Learn more at aaa.com/join.
Start your Sunday off right with brunch at the Old Hitching Post in Hanson. The Old Hitching Post offers a full buffet brunch every Sunday from 10 to 1. Fill up on all your favorites like eggs and bacon, sausage, home fries, French toast casserole, mac and cheese, homemade hash, fresh seafood, rice, veggies, fresh fruit, quiche, yogurt parfaits, pastries, ham, omelets, eggs benedict, and more. The Old Hitching Post Sunday brunch from 10 to 1 at 48 Spring Street, Route 58 in Hanson. Online at oldhp.com. That's oldhp.com.
Hey there, folks. It's Quinn Kelly reminding you to tune in Sunday night at 5 for the South Shore's first voice in sports talk radio, The Sports Exchange. Unmatched coverage of local high school action, as well as a relatable voice on all things Boston Pro Sports, we've got you covered live at 5 every Sunday night. Have a question for our host, missed last week's show, or just want to share a great sports story? You can find us on Twitter at SE on WATD. But remember, mark your calendar, folks, and we'll see you Sunday night at 5 for the Sports Exchange on 95.9 WATD.
Make an appointment Sunday morning at 11 for John Paul, the Car Doctor, on 95.9 WATD. Now, back to the Car Doctor.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Program on 95.9 WATD. With us on the phone is Mark Shieldrop, one of my co-workers from AAA. Good morning, Mark, and welcome back to the Car Doctor Program.
Hey, thanks for having me, John, and congratulations on your recent NHTSA Lifetime Achievement Award.
From now on, Jesse suggests that whenever I introduce myself, I should always say, "Hi, I'm John Paul, Lifetime Achievement Award winner."
There you go. I think that sounds really good to me.
Yeah, and I'll do that at, like, you know, Dunkin' Donuts drive-thrus, you know, Burger King, you know. If I'm ordering takeout and they say, "What's your name?" I'll go, "John Paul, Lifetime Achievement Award winner."
Yeah, and we can get that Lifetime Achievement Award winner discount that nobody knows about.
You know, usually I just go with the AAA discount whenever I can, but yeah. No, it was very flattering and humbling to get that award. And it also, the 400 or so people that commented on Facebook about it, whether it was Art Kinsman, who's the Region 1 director, who put some nice words on his own personal page, or, you know, I just took a picture of the award and kind of said, "This happened today." Last Monday when it actually did happen, and, you know, people from all around the country, and in fact some people from all around the world, congratulated me. And I think one of the most interesting things I did, and I mentioned it earlier in the program today, a listener came up to me who listens to the podcast and says, you know, "Thank you for everything you do and thank you for doing the podcast." And I always, whenever I meet people that kind of listen well outside of our listening area, I'm always sort of shocked and, again, humbled by that as well. So it was kind of neat. But yeah, we're not here to talk about me this morning. John Galvin already did that this morning, I think. So in his morning email, but I appreciate that as well. But we're here to talk about, you know, AAA now has, you know, we're like a lot of other companies. We're looking at some of the things we can do to minimize our impact on the environment and help them. And one of the things I just saw recently, and this is really why we're here to talk about it, but for people who switch over to digital membership cards, who don't want a physical card, I guess we're donating a dollar for each member who does that to plant trees.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Which is another reason why going digital is good. You know, I know some folks, they like the traditional plastic card in the wallet, but, you know, you can, if you have an iPhone now, you can put it in your Apple Wallet and it's digital there. You know, that's certainly something to consider. But yeah, now we're planting trees every time you renew your membership. I'm trying to pull up the press release in front of me because I don't have that one in front of me. But, you know, it's part of our overall efforts to reduce our environmental impact, you know, and be a good steward of the planet. We're a large organization. And there's a lot of things that we can do to really make a positive impact on the environment, and at least, you know, look at how we operate our business, you know, how much paper we use. So this program is for Earth Month, and we're partnering with the National Forest Foundation. So we're going to donate a dollar to the NFF to plant a tree every time somebody opts into digital membership. So if it's something you haven't done yet, you know, give it a consideration. It's a nice way to, you know, get a tree out there and growing. And as we know, changing the tide of climate change, planting trees is one of the most effective things we can do. You know, nature's already kind of figured out how to sequester carbon. So do that?
No.
So if you're interested, you go to AAA.com/digital member and you can opt in there.
Yeah, all I got to do is get my wife to do it because she loves her AAA card, physical card. She loves it. I'm trying to get her to not do that, but little change at a time. And like you pointed out, you know, we talk about Earth Month, but Earth Day I think is next Monday. I think Earth Day has traditionally always been April 22nd, and it was it's changed a lot over time a little bit, but. Again, we're concerned about the environment at AAA, and what we have done now is when you call for road service, you may get a gasoline truck that comes out. In fact, we've done away with a lot of our diesel vehicles. We've switched over a lot to gasoline vehicles because the gasoline vehicles are just, even as clean as the new diesels are, gasoline vehicles are just cleaner. But we also have what could be one of the largest fleets of Ford Lightning pickup trucks in the country, I think.
Yes, that's right. We have 36 now, and we're not just saying, oh, we have them on order and we're testing them out. These are vehicles that are on the ground. They've got the graphics and decals on them, and we're rolling them out, and we're starting to really use them for a lot of the things that pickup truck with the AAA branding you see. Oftentimes, those are our battery trucks when you need us to come and test your battery and replace it. So we're moving on to those Lightnings. I'm really excited. I'm actually going to be driving one. The fleet has been very generous in terms of letting employees really get an experience behind the wheel of these things, whether what was our Hyundai Ioniq 5 driving school cars, which our driving school has been really great about getting employees an opportunity to check those out. Well, the fleet's going to let me drive an F-150 Lightning to Great Barrington for a ride and drive event that we are going to be participating in. So anyone in that part of the state interested in EVs will get a chance to see one. But you're going to start seeing these more on the road, and they really are pretty indistinguishable from our traditional service vehicles. There's a little bit of a green flag, a little banner on the bed of the vehicle, but otherwise it's just a AAA truck going out there getting the job done. And it's a big investment for us, but it's an investment in the future. You know, it's something that we think has a lot of advantages, not just environmentally, but in terms of efficiency, because we are planning on powering our facilities with 100% renewable energy by 2035, and we've installed about 30 charging stations across our properties and facilities, some of them for public use, and we're putting solar panels on our headquarters in Providence. So it's kind of the dream I have as a future EV owner of creating my own electricity and using those electrons to power my EV and really kind of be self-sufficient in that way, knowing that, you know, I'm driving a vehicle powered by the sun from the roof of my building. So, you know, it's kind of our long-term vision. We see where it's going, and we're excited to have those vehicles in the fleet now.
Yeah, it is. And you can almost tell that our building, although it wasn't designed for it in a way, but our building, because it's a big flat roof and it's a 100,000 square foot building, I think, is an ideal place to put solar panels, because we get good exposure from the sun. We don't have a ton of tall trees around us, so the building is always bathed in sunshine, so it's a great place to put solar panels. And I think in some of our other locations, we're doing solar panel sort of carport type things. So where the trucks sit outside under a gigantic carport, we're doing solar panels on those. And you're right, we're looking to try to do this wherever we can and wherever we have these vehicles. I think the one place we're a little bit limited currently is in our fleet location, which is in kind of the edge of Manhattan, only because the infrastructure isn't there. So we put level 2 charging there instead of level 3. But I know the last time I was at the Providence fleet location, they had a bunch of level 3 charging stations set up, a couple level 2s. So we're utilizing those to charge our own vehicles. And you're right, to be able to, that dream of not going to a gas station. You know, I can't put an oil well in my yard and a refinery, as much as I probably want to, but the idea that I can put panels on the roof of my house, you know, it's certainly a major investment. But on the other hand, it is something that you can do. In fact, a former AAA Connecticut employee, Jim McPherson. I think he has a Chevy Bolt and a Tesla Model X. He has solar panels on the roof of his house, and he has installed solar panels on the roof of his, he has a double depth two car garage, and he also has a geothermal heat pump system. And he basically has no electric bill these days because he's making so much electricity with all the panels. His heat and air conditioning almost costs him nothing, and it doesn't cost him much to fuel his vehicles. So so he's able to do that. And the idea that I think as more people opt to do this and charge at home, the other thing that's going to happen is there's going to be less people running out of gas, because people get in there, you know, just like you and probably do every day. You plug in your laptop, you plug in your tablet, you plug in your phone. And you start the morning every morning with a fully charged device. And people do that with their car. They get in their car, they get out of their car at night, they plug in their home charger, and they start the day with 250, 300 miles, 200 miles of range, whatever the case is. And they're able to do that, where most people drive around with a quarter to a half a tank of gas, and they always kind of think, oh, well, I'll just get gas at the next gas station, and they forget. And I don't know how many out-of-gas calls we do every single day at AAA, but we don't do very many out-of-electricity calls.
No, not really. We do have six vehicles that are equipped for roadside battery charging. So if you do run out of a charge and you're just close to that charging spot or home, and it makes more sense to top you off with just enough range to get there instead of putting you on the flatbed and towing you to your destination. No, we can do that. But you're right, the demand for those has been relatively soft, and most EV owners, you know, they're driving less than 100 miles a day, significantly less than that. Yeah. And that's more than most EV range. And, you know, it's funny, I noticed this topic kind of came up, and I thought of it in a different way because of somebody, you know, pointing this out, which is interesting. But say you live in a state where there's hurricanes, you know, sometimes you see those gas lines as people are trying to, you know, see higher ground or get out of the path of the storm. And I've seen people say, imagine having an EV and running out of charge when you have to evacuate. You know, what do you do? But the fact is, most people who own EVs, when it's time to leave home and evacuate, they're leaving with a full charge. They don't need to stop for gas. They can go, you know, 200, maybe up to 300 miles from wherever they're going. And oftentimes that's about the range of where they're going to be going anyways with a gas-powered car. So in some ways, you might have a leg up on other folks who have to gas up along the way or get gas before they leave, and they're dealing with the gas line. So you're right, it's a little different, you know, in terms right. of, you know, how you kind of view owning an EV. And it's until you own one, you really oftentimes you're not really exactly picturing exactly how it is when you have one in your driveway.
Yeah. Yeah, you brought up a really good point, because I think last year, maybe it was in Philadelphia, there was a big ice storm and there was people stuck on the highway for 2 days or whatever the case is. And somebody said, well, can you imagine if this was an electric car? If it was an electric car, you probably would have been in better shape, because you probably would have started the day with a full charge. Electric cars are very economical when they're stopped, because they're not using power. Now, some of them will have resistance heaters, which will heat the cabin. Others will use a heat pump style system. And still others, you can just be fairly comfortable with just the seat heaters on, and just the seat is warm, and you can sit in the car. And I think I read somewhere that your typical, like, Tesla Model 3 or Model Y, you could, with a full charge, you could sit in your car and stay warm for something like 6 days in a row. Way longer than you could in a gasoline car that is sitting there idling. And even if you shut it off periodically and restart it, maybe a day would be as long as you could stay there. So electric vehicles are better. One thing that came up, there's a few other AAA clubs that have Ford Lightning pickup trucks. And I want to say it was maybe the Chicago Club has two of them. And they put studded snow tires on it. And that was the vehicle they used for all their extrication, because the vehicles are heavy. And with the studded snow tires, it bit into the snow and ice conditions a whole lot better. And they found that where they would normally try to winch a vehicle out of the snow or out of a snowbank, somebody who slid off the road, they would just go with a strap, hook up to it, and gently just pull the vehicle out of, you know, back onto the road. And they said because of the weight of the Lightning, it did that much better than any of their other vehicles. And they were frankly surprised by it. But, you know, the vehicle is pretty heavy. And, you know, one of the things that's worth mentioning is, you know, are we prepared for an electric vehicle world as it's coming up? And Jay Carrera, who runs our automotive training program for our road service technicians, about 2 years ago, I think, we bought a used Ford, used Nissan Leaf to do training. We wanted to kind of see what was involved with doing some of the training when it came to an electric vehicle. And the Leaf was relatively inexpensive at the time. Since then, we also bought one of the Hertz former Tesla Model 3 vehicles that came off, that as Hertz decided that electric vehicles weren't the perfect replacement for their gasoline cars. So we bought one of those as well. So we have in our fleet of vehicles, like you mentioned, we have the 36 Lightnings. We have a couple of Ioniq 5s. But we also have, for training purposes, we also have the Leaf and a Tesla. And some of the simple things that people forget about with road service sometimes is some of the Teslas don't use a key at all. It uses a card that sits in your wallet. And, you know, we have to make sure we have that. We want to make sure that, you know, the 12-volt battery that nearly every electric vehicle has, and hybrids as well, in the Tesla, it's a specially designed battery that Tesla uses, but those 12-volt batteries wear out. So we want to be familiar with how to change them, how to test them, and do all of that. So our training is important as getting these fleet of vehicles out there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as a large organization like AAA with a fleet, it's kind of our responsibility in a way to try these things out and learn lessons and share this information with other folks, because there's a lot of organizations with fleets out there. And you're right about the new capabilities that you really don't figure out until you're out there actually in practice. So our colleagues in other parts of the country realizing that, hey, heavier vehicles might actually be advantageous in the winter. I also like the no idling aspect. You know, many of our vehicles are on the side of the road helping folks. If we're not idling, but we're still able to maintain our safety equipment and flashing lights, that's good for the environment and the people who live near where we're doing those calls. And in some places, say Manhattan, where we do have some operations, but we don't have the real estate, you know, to put a lot of solar panels, at least, you know, we can know that many more of our vehicles in the five boroughs aren't idling and contributing to the air quality there, which is an equity issue in many cases. So it's exciting to be part of an organization that really wants to just kind of grab the bull by the horns, find out where EVs make sense and where there's still challenges and room for improvement. And overall, you know, having the ability to scale this technology and really take advantage of it is pretty cool. You know, we could easily just, you know, rely on the tried and true equipment. And we do have plenty of vehicles, you know, gas-powered vehicles in our fleet. And we don't anticipate to completely phase them out for a little while. But ultimately, that is our long-term goal. And we're hoping to be carbon neutral by 2045. Which, you know, seems like a lofty goal, but it also seems like there's a lot of time. And as we've seen in the EV market, it's changed dramatically just in the past 5 years, let alone 10 years. So when we think about 20 years in the future, you know, I think we're taking some really solid steps to really, you know, understand this technology and see how our roads are going to look different and respond to our members as they're driving much more different vehicles.
Well, I'm pretty sure I'll be just a pile of carbon in 20 years.
I'll be close myself.
Yeah, but the idea that we're doing this and we're trying to, you know, we have a electric vehicle webpage that people can look at, and that gets updated periodically. And we're trying to be there for our members to try to let them know, you know, if they're considering. And like you pointed out, not everybody wants a electric vehicle. Not everyone's prepared, whether it's either financially to buy an electric vehicle, or maybe they don't have the ability to charge at home. They live in an apartment and they're working it, and you know, they have to park on the street and they have to rely on public charging. Will it work? It does. It's a little bit more work. Where I live, the little tiny, teeny tiny house I live on Cape Cod, and the tin house I live in Florida here, there is no good public charging in either location. There is level two in the little downtown that I live in, which is really slow. I tried using it last year. But for a lot of people, even just I have a outlet by the side of my house. I drove a electric vehicle last year and a plug-in hybrid last year. I was able to charge with 110 volts. Although it is kind of a convenience charge, it's a low charge, it's a slow charge. But if you're only driving 15 or 20 miles a day, you plug it in at night, you get a full charge the next day. So, you know, if you drove 150 or 200 miles, it might take 2 days to charge up with 110 volts. But it is possible. So depending where you live, you know, we can help try to educate our members and even our non-members who are interested. They can still check out our webpage and see what it's all about. And we'll even come out and talk to our members if they belong to a Rotary Club or a Chamber of Commerce or something like that. You'll come out and chat with them as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm always available for public chats. You know, I've done a lot of lunch and learns at Councils on Aging across the state, and I love doing that, where I just get into the nuts and bolts of EVs, what they are, what they mean, and not to push EVs on anybody. You know, I think right. part of the having a real honest conversation about this is discussing limitations and how an EV is not the perfect solution for everyone. But there's a lot of interest out there. A lot of terminology, level two, level three, what type of charger should I get? Should I wait? You know, should I buy now? What's going on with the used prices? All that stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's a great opportunity for me to just get out there in the community and kind of dispel all that stuff for folks. So if anyone's interested, please go to AAA.com/EV and find out more about EVs. And through going to that website, you'd be able to get a hold of me and get something scheduled.
No, and what's interesting is, and a reader said this to me, I think it's going to appear in a column coming up in a week or two. They said, I'm a little confused with you, and why not, you know? And they said, one day you talk about electric vehicles, another day you talk about electric bicycles, and another day you talk about a 10,000 horsepower, drag car. What's up with you? Do you like electric cars or don't you? And I said, well, the truth is you found me out. I like everything. I like everything with wheels on it. And, I went to a local car show this Wednesday, and I was looking at a Pontiac Solstice that someone, which normally comes with 80 horsepower, four-cylinder engine, and I think that this turbocharged one was 240 horsepower. They don't make it anymore. It was built on an Opel platform, and Saturn had the Sky, which was the same. Someone managed somehow to stick a 550 horsepower LS7 engine under the hood of this thing. And, and I'm like, this thing's fantastic. But on the other hand, right over from that, somebody had an electric conversion to a Volkswagen Bug. And I'm like, this is fantastic. The idea that we can do this, and the idea that people can either do it themselves, somebody basically put a Corvette drivetrain under a little tiny Pontiac Solstice was pretty phenomenal. But the idea that they did that, and the choices that we have today, the choices that, if you want a gasoline car, go buy a gasoline car. You want a hybrid, go buy a hybrid. I just answered a question. Somebody was interested in a hybrid, and they wanted to know a couple of models that I thought they should look at. You want a plug-in hybrid? Somebody wrote to me this morning and said they have a Honda Clarity plug-in, and they really love it because they can drive 30 to 50 miles, depending on weather, on an electric vehicle, and almost the gasoline engine never runs, but they still want to know how often they should change the oil in it. Or if you want to go full electric, you have that choice. Or if... someday it will come that maybe your car will run on hydrogen. Who knows? But the idea that there are lots of choices out there for people, I think, is what is phenomenal right now. And if you want to go electric, come to us for education. If you want to go plug-in hybrid, come to us for education. And if you want to go out and you want to buy a, 740 horsepower, Hellcat Chrysler product, go buy that too. Go buy whatever you want. But the idea of this, we're always going to be there to try to, as AAA, we're going to try to help people, go with a good choice, go with what they want. And if they want to go something a little bit more environmentally friendly, like an electric vehicle, go to our website. Like you said, it's AAA.com/EV.
Yeah, absolutely, man. The car you own doesn't have to be a polarizing thing. And not everything has to be politically charged. We've been driving cars for a little bit over 100 years now, maybe a little more than that. And it's a key part of our lives. Transportation is about getting where you need to go, building those memories, road trips. The cars are something that connect us and unify us. It'd be great to have better public transportation, but the fact is, in this country, owning a car is a ticket to freedom and seeing friends and family. And, let's focus on the positive things. New cars are amazing piece of the technology, amazing stuff is happening safety wise, saving lives just through the technology we're getting in newer vehicles, regardless of the powertrain. So
Absolutely. You know, back in the turn of the last century, whenever that was, you know, people didn't necessarily want cars. They just wanted faster horses. And the car turned out to be the faster horse. And it was sort of interesting that Clara Ford, Henry Ford's wife, actually drove an electric car. She drove a Detroit Electric because, first off, she was one of the few women that actually drove vehicles, but she liked the idea that, unlike the, you know, Model T, she didn't need to have to crank it to get it going, and she would get in this, you know, Detroit Electric and go drive it. And even though, you know, the Model T was the, you know, one of the most popular vehicles ever built in the world, at, you know, certainly at the time it was, and the idea that you know, Henry Ford's wife drove an electric car, even goes to show you that even back then, there was a choice for people, and it's whatever works for you. So I think that's pretty good. Mark, I want to thank you for taking a little time out of your Sunday morning and joining us on the Car Doctor program. Always fun to talk with you.
Yeah, definitely, John. Always fun to talk to you, and it was great seeing you in Denver, and look forward to listening to the podcast every week.
There you go. Thanks, Mark. Take care. We need to take another break, pay some bills. My name is John Paul. This is the Car Doctor program. You're listening on 95.9 WATD. We'll be right back.
Start your Sunday off right with brunch at the Old Hitching Post in Hanson. The Old Hitching Post offers a full buffet brunch every Sunday from 10 to 1. Fill up on all your favorites like eggs and bacon, sausage, home fries, French toast casserole, mac and cheese, homemade hash, fresh seafood, rice, veggies, fresh fruit, quiche, yogurt parfaits, pastries, ham, omelets, eggs benedict, and more. The Old Hitching Post Sunday brunch from 10 to 1 at 48 Spring Street, Route 58 in Hanson. Online at oldhp.com. That's oldhp.com.
AAA is with you at every moment in your life. They have 24-hour, 7 roadside assistance, which covers you in any car you're driving or riding in, even a rental or your friend's wheels. They have great member rates on home and auto insurance, savings on travel, hotels, and rental cars, and discounts on hundreds of your favorite brands. You're covered on and off the road. Learn more at aaa.com/join.
Mark your calendar for the Talking Information Center Starry Night Gala, happening on Thursday, June 6th, 5 till 9 at Indian Pond Country Club in Kingston. For a packed night of food and fun to raise awareness for this longtime South Shore nonprofit organization. The Talking Information Center is a volunteer-driven radio reading service serving the visually impaired population of Massachusetts. The evening is hosted by WATD radio personality Rob Hakala, and live music and dancing provided by the multi-New England Music Award-nominated band Total Strangers. The evening also features great auction items and recognition of Star TIC volunteers of over 46 years. That's the Talking Information Center Starry Night Gala, Thursday, June 6th, 5 till 9, at Indian Pond Country Club in Kingston. For tickets, more information, or to just make a contribution, visit the Talking Information Center at ticnetwork.org. That's ticnetwork.org.
You let that mountain reach high. You let that river run wild.
Hi, this is Jeff Neely.
And this is Joe Clapp.
And I'm Stephen Davis.
We're Humble Roots. Tune into Twilight Showcase Radio.
Hosted by Sandy Stride and Keith James.
On 95.9 WATD and 95.9WATD.com.
And of course, visit TwilightShowcase.org.
Twilight Showcase, tonight from 8 to 10 on 95.9 WATD. Make an appointment Sunday morning at 11 for John Paul, the Car Doctor, on 95.9 WATD. Now, back to the Car Doctor.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program on 95.9 WATD. I apologize. I don't know what happened with our first guest, Randy Leffingwell. Maybe we can get him on. The book is fabulous, so you know, take a look at it and see what it is. It's just, they did a nice job with it. It just a lot, and again, sort of what I liked. There was lots of pictures, so it's just one of those things I like. One of the other emails I got this week was I got an email from the people at Pennzoil, and again, I don't get free oil from Pennzoil. Don't think that I do. Larry Chen apparently is a stunt driver, and they and Pennzoil's role in this like kind of professional stunt driving program that they do. And there is, if you want to check it out, if you kind of like that stuff, go to Pennzoil.com, and you can find out about all of this stunt driving and what they do, you know, Hollywood stunt driving. It's just it's a lot of fun stuff to read, and go check that out on the Pennzoil website. And you know, one of the stunt drivers, they did a short film series in Mexico called the Pennzoil Baja, and they built two identical Jeeps as stunt vehicles. Temperatures were above 115 degrees, and you know, they were driving in dirt and deep sand, and you know, the engines performed just the way they should. They checked the oil on a regular basis, and they said the even in those terrible conditions, which is tough on an engine, the oil stayed consistent, while the other support vehicles being driven at a quarter of the performance level all suffered from some temperature issues. And my point is here that oil is really helps to cool the engine. People don't think about oil. People think about antifreeze and radiators. They don't think about how the oil can actually help cool the engine. In fact, oil contributes to about 25% of engine cooling. So if your engine is down a quart of oil or a quart and a half of oil, you can watch the temperature of the engine rise up. And as the temperature gets hotter, it's going to actually cause more oil breakdown. So so it is important to use the right oil in the car. So, you know, check out Pennzoil's website, and you can find out more information about that. And, you know, some of their other stuff, they have a lot of little educational type things in there as well that you can look at and learn more about oil. I hope that in the next few weeks, we're going to have somebody on from Pennzoil to talk about kind of spring, summer car care, but the importance of oil. And one question that always comes up with oil is synthetic blend. How blended is it? How much synthetic do you really get? And we'll find out from the Toyota. We'll find out from the Pennzoil engineers about that. Hey, that music means we need to go. I want to thank Mark Shieldrop for calling in. I want to thank Jesse Wilkins for doing everything he does on the board.